So we were just talking, Mike and I were just talking. We're doing this series called Christian, and what does it mean to be a Christian? Am I a Christian? I don't know. And then we were talking, and we didn't realize that we're not sure if our wives are Christian.
I don't have a clue if Jenny identifies as a Christian or not. So people ask us all the time to have Jenny and Lisa back on the show. It goes from questions and then crescendos into a roar. We are nearing that roar-like demand for their return to the podcast. And it'll also be good for us as people married to Lisa Gunger and Jenny McCarg to know what they identify with spiritually and if they believe in God, and if so, what they believe about God. Because I honestly have no idea.
Wives, are you Christians?
So when I was 16, my grandmother gave me a 14 karat gold cross necklace for Christmas. And I used to wear it every day until about 4, maybe 5 years ago. I just gradually stopped wearing it more and more. I used to sometimes wear it on a Sunday, but then even then, I gradually stopped wearing it. And it was because everything that that cross had represented to me in term Christianity, it no longer held that for me anymore. Instead, it held judgment. It held trauma. It held everything that was the opposite of love. And I felt like if I was wearing that, that was the message I was conveying to people who felt that way about Christianity, and they would see me as an enemy and as someone that couldn't understand them. And I also didn't feel like in my own life that that term applied any longer, because I think Christianity has become so synonymous with evangelical, and all the things of what evangelicalism has done and growing up in that, and all the working through that, trying to figure out what is my faith. They're negative things. I mean, I would love to think of Christianity as being the beautiful ideals of Jesus and what he spoke to in the Gospels. But that's not what Christianity means to a lot of people. So I almost wish that we had a new term for it, because I do feel like there's a lot of negativity with it, a lot of negative association with it. And so that cross necklace sits in my jewelry box still, because it still holds a special meaning, because it was a gift from my grandmother. Mm-hmm. And it represents my special relationship with her. But it no longer represents what it had in my life as far as a symbol of what I aspire to be.
No WWJD bracelets for you?
Nope. And that's hilarious. In talking about that, I remember when those came out, I always was hesitant to wear that, because that to me was an open judgment from people. Because if you weren't behaving like people thought you should behave as a Jesus follower, and they saw that bracelet, it was like you would do this to yourself, like thinking, oh my goodness, I'm not acting like I should. But they also would hold judgment against you. In the same reason why I never had a cross hanging from my dashboard or the rearview mirror or a Jesus bumper sticker, because when I'm on the road, anything is possible when I'm driving.
When the honey bed is behind the wheel.
Don't want people to know.
No, I didn't, because I was like, they're going to see, I'm not going to be behaving really Christian like on this road.
That's like Ellen, you know, her thing, be kind.
Uh-huh.
And she's like, she hates when she has road rage, because then people look over and they see it's her, and then she has to be nice to them.
Yeah. I mean, it's that. It's that exactly thing. It's like the, so yeah.
Lisa, are you a Christian? Or maybe I should phrase it this way, Lisa. If you were to die tonight and stand before the Father, and he were to say, why should I let you into my kingdom of heaven? What would you say?
I would say, there's the Father.
Oh, I know.
The Father. Let's talk about all the he's that are going to embrace us when we die. Oh, man, and he, oh. I want to say, nah, nope, and just let that be. What I've been saying when people ask me that is, well, who, I think Jesus's retort was always really, was a really good one. Well, who do you say I am? I think we all want these definitions so that we know who's in and out and who's safe and who to trust. And I'm pretty sick of that, especially with recent events. Like, I had a BuzzFeed video come out and the title was How Pastoring a Mega Church, which I'd never, didn't pastor a mega church.
Small detail.
Led me to unbelief or led me.
No, to not believe in God.
To not believe in God. And at first their title was going to be How Pastoring a Mega Church Led Me to Atheism. And I actually said, this is untrue. You might want to change that.
It's entirely untrue. Both
things. I was like, well, I think both things are untrue. And they said, yeah, we'll change it. And then, so I had this video came out that I didn't have control over the title. And needless to say, it was pretty polarizing. The producer got death threats. She's actually a friend of mine. Some people really loved it. I mean, it was kind of crazy. Some people thought it was really beautifully honest and they knew what I was saying. They're like, oh, you don't say anywhere in there that you don't believe in God anymore. And the whole point of the video was supposed to be like leading to this book I wrote, talks about what I believe now. But then a lot of Christians just hated it. And I got a ton of hate mail, ton of hateful comments. Recently got one of my, which has been one of my favorites, the woman yesterday on Instagram was something how I'm soon, because I worship Satan, I'm going to be weeping like in my old age because my daughters are following the wrong path or something like that. It was funny to me. But
that classic punchline, because you worship Satan, you will weep as your daughters follow the wrong path.
Welcome to the Heretics Club.
I'm just like, what do they think is happening? Like I get up in the morning, instead of having a quiet time, I just bow to this upside down cross that I set on fire and just like, it's humorous to me because I don't exactly know how that works, like how Satanists worship Satan.
So I think I guess they just believe the title of your video.
But, yeah. True. Which I believe in God. I get they equate if you don't believe in God, that you immediately are worshiping the devil. That's interesting to me. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I don't know what to say about it. I'm definitely not a Christian in the traditional sense by any means. I recently had this experience where I went to the float tank, the good old float tank.
Huge fan.
Big fan. How long have you been in that? 3 hours?
3 or 4, yeah.
It's pretty wild.
It's a sensory deprivation float tank where you go and you float in salt water, naked, in the dark, in the quiet. That's what you do. And you just lay in there.
Yeah.
The water and the air are body temperature. Uh-huh. So you feel nothing.
Nothing. Yeah. That's the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So normally when I go in there, it's felt really peaceful and calm. Yeah. Like everyone else goes in there for, I go in there to unwind and meditate. And so I went in there and had this, it was really a difficult experience. I'd never had such tension in the float tank before. I was wrestling through some pretty emotional hangups. And during a moment where I almost left the float tank, I kept like pressing through and trying to get to like underneath this like fear come up. And I was going underneath that and underneath that and underneath that, trying to like dig to the bottom of my fear, and heard the voice of Jesus, what I understood to be Jesus, say, I've always been with you. I felt something like shift. Well, I actually felt this shift right before that. I was really struggling, kind of freaking out a little bit and then felt something shift and heard an audible voice that said, I've always been with you, and felt so much peace and calmness. And even before that, I mean, all these years I've said, I love Jesus, I love God, but I never believed Mike that he actually heard the voice of Jesus.
It's fair and common.
I mean, it wasn't like I didn't think you were lying. I just was like, really? Does that really happen to people, or what is this? And so I felt immediate calm and I was crying. And then I thought, I'm going crazy. I just heard an audible voice and that's not good. Like, psychiatrists would not think that's a good calming thing. And that's when I thought of you, because I remember you saying that exact thing. And that brought me a lot of calm, knowing that you had thought the same thing.
And then she saw the creepy pool cleaner that was just standing in the corner of the float tank.
Oh,
I have always been with you.
I've been here for hours. Can I get out now?
That'd be a real bad vibe. Just saying.
So a lot of people would say, oh, that means you're Christian. You've heard the audible voice of Jesus Christ. But here's an interesting thing. It was the consciousness of Jesus. It was also like this non-male, non-female presence, more consciousness, even though it was a lower voice. It was just the understanding, this is the consciousness of non-gendered Jesus Christ.
It makes perfect sense to me. I'm just like, yeah, little cosmic Christ speaking in the room.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I get it. Like, that's, yeah. I think it's a relatively small club, us audible Jesus folks.
Well, and it was really.
I like that someone else can now understand the self-incredulity of the experience. Yes. Of like, because somebody like charismatic Christians.
I need a brain scan.
Right. Charismatic Christians come to me and they're like, I have prayed for an experience like that my whole life. And I was like, I snuck to a psychiatric care facility on lunch because I didn't want to scare my wife, who was excited that I was talking about God again. But I was like, I might be going insane.
and then there's been like a lot of doubt behind that days after. Did I really hear that? I mean, I haven't shared that with many people, like my family and you guys. And
now millions of people.
And now millions of people. So this is how it happens with podcasts. My children don't know this, but there's a lot of doubt after. Like, was that real? Did I really hear that? Was I imagining things? Mm-hmm. I was in a completely dark room by myself for an hour. Was that a hallucination?
Of course it was a hallucination. But everything we experience is a hallucination. Like, I get the heart of that question.
Yeah.
But like, that's the landscape where all experiences happen anyway.
Yeah.
So you're an I don't know or a no, or a, what are you? Are you pulling a Jesus card and saying, who do you say I am?
Oh, I'm pulling the Jesus card. I'm pulling the Jesus card.
And you said no, Jenny?
Not in the terms...
in the terms that you are a Christian?
Ooh.
Maybe more in the ideals of how we treat people and how we show love to everyone. And even then, I'm kind of the frame of mind now that it's not like professing a belief in Jesus Christ. That's not the determining factor to me in living a Christ-like life. Yeah, or being an example of Christ in the way we interact with people.
It's funny that to say Christ-like life, that it is associated with believing in Christ, like Christ was walking around being like, I believe in myself. Yeah. And that's what's Christ-like, to believe in Christ.
Right. And so, I don't think that it's that, you know, because as Mike was, he kind of was joking about it, but like the whole, if you were to die tonight,
stand before the Father.
Stand before the Father. Like, I don't think that's what our level of Christianity should be based on if we're going to call it Christianity, because I just, like I said, I wish there was such a new term for it, because I feel like it's been hijacked. And maybe it's just like my understanding of Christianity. What's happened is it has changed. I'm no longer the little girl going to Sunday school and going to VBS and being told all these things of what's associated with Christianity. And so maybe it has been this thing that, you know, while on the surface it seems like things are good and it's professing love, but underneath it is also saying, if you're not this, then this is bad. And it's a judgment. It's a full on judgment. Anyway, I just feel like it's not the place in which I had been. I'm still searching. I'm still trying to wrestle with the belief in God and maybe even the belief in Jesus. Before, I would have had this one like framework of of religion and thought everything else was not, if it wasn't fitting this framework, it was not part of it.
Yeah.
But now I'm kind of like giving the things that can be seen and the experiences that you can be had. I mean, Buddhism is the big one to me that rings through. I think there are other wonderful things about other religions that become apparent, and things that cannot just be discounted, and that there's not just a one end all be all road of life.
Yeah. It seems like for me, which it seems like for like all of us are these religions. So Christianity was the thread. Like there's all these threads, Christianity, Hinduism, Buddhism, that can lead you to the truth. And then you kind of drop down into the truth that all of them hold. So I think I have this newfound greater love for Christianity because it was the path that led me here. Hmm. That those are the stories I've been told. And I still remember scriptures that really helped me. And why I think the thing that I've been asking myself is, why did I hear the voice of Jesus now? Hmm. Because I've prayed for that countless times. I was on the floor of the bathtub crying, begging for the voice of Jesus Christ to speak to Michael when he was an atheist. Why didn't that happen then? Why was it now, when I actually still really love Jesus and believe God is everywhere? Why now? Why not to someone else when I know they've been asking for that for a really long time? And why Jesus? Why was that the voice I heard? Voice. Why wasn't it some other, you know, why was it not some other voice? A lot of why questions. But what I do know that I felt in that moment was belonging, homeness, tethered, not in a constricting way, but a free way. And it gave me a love again for Christianity. Not that Jesus created Christianity, but for this path that I've been on. I believe that it's led me to some really beautiful, deep places that wouldn't be had I not followed that path.
Who is or was Jesus? Oh, this just was a YouTube show. That was a good facial expression.
The best facial expression I've seen.
Well, it wasn't happy, but it was good.
Well, that, to me,
if there was a sound for that face, what would that be? It'd be like,
like, I feel like when you say that, it requires like extensive knowledge of scripture. And maybe I should list that as a disclaimer. Of all those, the four of us in the room, I know the least bit of scripture. And that was even growing up in church. I cannot remember scripture right offhand, even after doing Bible drills and memorization and stuff like that. I mean, I don't know that I could speak to
it. I just wonder
who
you think Jesus is or was.
Do you think he was a real person?
Possibly. Yeah.
That's fair.
Do you think he rose from the dead?
I think Jesus rose from the dead. I do. I do. I actually do. Isn't that awesome?
It's awesome.
So there was a time I really was like, I don't know. I mean, was he born of a virgin? Virgin. I slurred that word.
Just a side note. Biologically, there's no such thing as a virgin.
Or virgin is a woman who belongs to herself.
An excellent sociological framing.
Somebody's been listening to the Liturgist podcast.
Oh. I actually didn't get that from the Liturgist podcast.
You got it from Hillary, though, right?
No, I read
okay,
books.
Okay.
I read books. I don't only listen to this podcast. Oh my gosh.
Good Lord. Goodness. What a self-centered bastard.
I feel like I didn't answer correctly.
There's no correct.
Well, I know, but I feel like I think the thing is like, I'm not so sure about things anymore.
How
essentially.
Is that incorrectly?
Well, it's just like a
welcome to almost every listener.
I know, but I've been on this I'm not so sure path.
That's fine. That's a great path.
I mean,
why would you ever want to leave the path if I'm not so sure?
I don't know. Maybe I don't want to miss out on whatever my end time will be. I don't know. I don't even know what I'm saying.
Unpack that. Yeah. Like, so what?
Yeah. What is it?
There's a fear there. Mm-hmm. What is it? Mm-hmm. Do you ever think about what happens when you die and how that relates to Christianity?
I used to think about that more so, like especially when you and I would talk more about your deconstruction and everything and like what had led you there and some of the paths of it. That's one of the things to unpack is like when you start down this path, it's the realization, well, if Jesus is not real, God's not real, or none of that, then what happens to our souls after death, you know, like, where do we go? And I think that's one of the things that like could be scary at first, thinking that there is nothing, if that's the possibility. But again, don't know if it's Jesus, but I feel like there is something now after death. I just don't know if I'm not saying I believe in Jesus, is it going to get me there or not? I don't know. I think I just kind of just twisted all of it in my head as I'm saying.
Are you?
I was starting off so strong on this thing.
Like 1 to 10.
Increasingly,
1 to 10. How confident are you in some sort of afterlife situation of conscious awareness?
5.
And then, how confident are you that Christianity has anything to do with that?
5 and 6.
I had it under the table. I knew.
Oh, interesting.
What do you mean anything to do with it? Like that you have to profess Jesus is your savior in order
like
to experience an afterlife?
It's the Jesus story of the afterlife, I'm assuming. So,
yeah. Like, because
you're not going to get there and see.
Right. She gave us double coin flip. She's like, well, 50-50 shot, something happens. 50-50 shot, anything to do with Christianity.
But I can see a five-headed sloth there.
Yeah, like it's like, so are you
whispers
saying
in algebra to you?
And are we saying that if you don't believe in Jesus, if you don't believe the path of Christianity, then you don't get this afterlife of whatever it can be? That doesn't seem right. You know, I don't know how much in depth to go in that. I just have this feeling, this gut feeling that it's just, if you say it has to be this way or it's no way, then that to me is puts too much limit on what we're saying God is supposed to be or what the universe is supposed to be. And it's putting it in a box and saying, this is your only way to get there, though. And that seems so unfair in this life that we have, that God has given us. If God is our creator, I just feel like God wouldn't put a stipulation of, but you have to follow it this way in order to have this life again or the after of it.
Mm-hmm. So that means there's not a Jesus that was sent to all the other life forms on all the other planets.
I remember thinking that.
Oh, that there was?
Mm-hmm. Once I was like, extraterrestrials are probable scientifically. Man, Jesus had to go to a lot of planets.
You have to ask Jesus into your protoplasm. But it wouldn't be Jesus. It'd be like, ask Zirgon into your protoplasm. And squeak these pom-poms after me.
I mean, man was involved in writing the Bible.
Yeah, of course. This will play out.
I am now going to forever live.
And the antennae of the great blog.
Praise.
This is their, they have more of a charismatic background than you and I do. This allows moments like these.
These are alien. These are alien charismatics. Yes.
But I mean, could we have been any more like Southern Baptist charismatic?
I mean, this is where YouTube would have been funny.
You guys are like, what is going on? They're looking side to side at each other. And we're just like. Oh, I'd be an alien charismatic. Yeah, sure.
So, afterlife, Lisa?
Yes.
Oh, interesting. Confidence 1 to 10.
I have no confidence in it. I mean, I think. I don't know. Confidence level, I have no idea what that range is.
Which 10, is 10 which is like,
I know.
The earth is round.
Okay. I'm probably at an 8.
Wow.
Oh, man.
Amazing.
Yeah, that is amazing, isn't it? The thing that makes up this, like, I experience weird things all the time. And whatever this is, and this, like, body, like, this skin bag thing and bones, once whatever this is gone, whatever is making me talk and heartbeat, I have a hard time thinking that that just forever ceases. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the eternity. This is right now. Michael knows this. I've had like a pretty, which is what I was wrestling with in the float tank. As a kid, the idea of eternity would really freak me out. I would kind of go around and around in my head and it made me uncomfortable. I would sit there and I would go forever, 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 forever. And it would just freak me out.
Like and, the Sandlot kid.
Forever. And I kind of squashed that. And then I was like, oh, yeah, it's going to be awesome to be with Jesus and a house forever. That'll be great. And then just recently as an adult, that idea has come back around and really been messing with me. And I find I've gotten in this weird loop that I couldn't figure out what was. I'm trying to figure out, like I've told all you guys, I really felt like a 5, like the past. Maybe, was it been 2 months? Like, and I could figure out, and I was always trying to find the meaning in everything. This means this, and this means this. So that means this is what's going to happen when I die. And really getting also caught up again in like the good things that you do now. And that's the energy. I'd never really given a lot of thought to even reincarnation. And all of a sudden I found myself really believing in that. What happens now? And I'm stuck in this now. Oh God, that means that's going to happen to me in the next life. And I'm just going to be stuck in this lifetime of hell or pain. No, I don't want that. I don't want that. I don't want that. Why do I think that's true? Like, so I would get stuck in this loop and then eventually this loop would unravel. And then I'd feel like a breath and then I would get stuck again. And then I'd get stuck in this loop thinking that if something happened to me and I died, then I would never see my girls again because my whole life I've believed I'm going to die and then I'm going to see my children again. I'm going to see my husband and then that's gone. I was completely terrified about that possible reality. So these new fears were kind of surfacing that I didn't even know were there because it had always been answered with Christianity. So that's what I was wrestling with in the float tank. Then I heard the voice of Jesus. So maybe there's nothing. Maybe this ends and it's just nothingness. And then, or maybe it all explodes again. There's another, it all starts again. But my guess would be there's something.
Like, I used to be fearful about there not being something, you know, that used to bring me fear, like what you said, especially when going down the path, well, if God's not here, if God is not what I thought it was or whatever. So it used to bring me down a path of fear about what's going to happen when I die. Same as you. Will I see I'm not going to see my children. I'm just going to go to the earth. dust. And then all that's left is like what I had been here on Earth, you know, when I was alive. And so that used to bring me fear, but it doesn't anymore, I don't think. I don't feel like I wrestle with that as much anymore. Like, it's more of, if there is something, then I don't think I'm going to be left out of that. Like, I still think that I will be a part of it, you know, like whatever choices I'm making here in my life here on Earth now, that's not going to keep me from being in whatever afterlife there is for me. Brought up in the culture in which we were brought up in, you're always working towards the afterlife. Like, that's your reward. Instead of enjoying the life on Earth and all that's part of it while you're here and being in communion with other people in your day-to-day life and making the most out of being in part of God's creation and all that is here on Earth. And I think it was always a striving for where your reward is in heaven, you know? And so when I started questioning everything and back and forth and back and forth, and there was a worry there about, oh no, it was full front for quite some time until at some point, I think it just kind of faded, that worry faded. And I feel like my enjoyment of life in this life right now is so much more than it used to be.
That's beautiful. Yeah.
You inspired me. Hey, I didn't know that. That's amazing. A lot of new information for me in this show.
I can say the same.
You inspired me. I really want to write a Southern gospel song about the afterlife from a there is no afterlife component. You know, like, because they have all these songs about going to heaven. So it'd be like, you know, like, take me to the void. There's no suffering. Take me to the void where there's not anything. Well, one day I know my consciousness will cease. Take me to the void where I can be in unknowing peace.
What was this pre-prepared?
It was not. That was compiled on the spot. Well done. A lot of Southern gospel in these veins.
That was amazing.
Do you have any preference on the scoring that's going to happen for that? Any certain kind of instrumentation?
It's a real liar.
Yeah.
That's that zone right there.
All right.
Take me to the void. Take me to the void. Where the snow is suffering. Take me to the void. Take me to the void where I can be in unknowing peace. So, if you haven't heard by now, we have a second podcast called The Alien and the Robot.
Got a theme song that you'll find yourself singing in the shower.
And it's available to our patrons, but we're doing something we've never done for The Alien and the Robot ever. And we're doing that October 5th and 6th in London at the Liturgist Gathering. We're doing a live recording of The Alien and the Robot with a special twist for the audience and only for the audience. So if you're anywhere near London, gosh, tomorrow. Then there's still some tickets available. We do have a podcast only ticket available if you just want to come Friday night. We'd love to see you. We're really excited about it. I'm actually kind of freaking out about how excited I am about how much fun this is going to be. But I'm not going to tell you what it is, and you'll never find out unless you're there or one of our patrons on Patreon. Sorry. We'll also be, in case you can't make London, if you're in the United States, like a few of our listeners, November 16th and 17th, we'll be in Minneapolis, and we'll be in Nashville, Tennessee, November 30th and December 1st. You can get tickets at theliturgistgathering.com,
And if you want to be a patron, just go to theliturgist.com and click the button that says join us. There's one other line of inquiry that's necessary.
What is it?
Can't talk about Christianity and Jesus without their child, the church. Mm-hmm. Or actually, I guess technically Christianity would be the child of Jesus and the church.
Wait, who's the church?
That's a great question.
Is this a polyamorous relationship?
I do think, yeah, some of the first century language around the Bride of Christ is real poly. Mm. It's real poly vibe. We are the Bride of Christ.
So specifically, what is the church? Does it matter? Are you a part of it?
Whoa.
Jenny's like, I'd like to plead the fifth.
Pass. Pass.
I mean, I think yes. I think I don't feel like I can be outside of the cosmic Christ. Hmm.
So are you defining the church as the cosmic Christ?
Yes.
So everything is the church.
That was just a great sentence. That just like my whole heart was just like, I'm serious. Oh. That was beautiful, Lisa. Oh.
So yes, I would be a part of that. Hmm. Was that all?
I love that. It sounds nice. It does. But then it means nothing.
Well, here comes the five. The five SWAT team crashing through the windows.
Is it just a way of saying the universe, the church, the universe? Or is there anything more than... I'm not saying there should be. I really am not. I'm just getting to why would one use the word church?
That's a good question. I don't know. I think it's helpful for human growth and certain stages of consciousness. That's why people use
the concept church.
Yeah.
I also like it.
For places to belong, structures to grow in. Mm. I think we need structures. But nothing means anything.
At the bottom, I agree with you. Church. How do you think about
this
the church?
This really should have been a YouTube episode. Just a Jenny reaction cam.
Well, okay, so Lisa, you said what? Structure?
Well, I think the idea, I mean, if when we're talking about like the church as the people who all gather and around this common belief, that's the structure of it. Mm-hmm. And I grew within that structure towards an understanding of love, though there were a lot of really false and oppressive things within that structure. False oppressive things are within every single structure that happens. That's why like I won't sit here and be like, the church sucks. Okay. I don't think that. I think that there's a lot of poison within it and a lot of love within it as well. Mm-hmm. The poison isn't Jesus. The poison isn't what was meant to be. The poison is power struggles, people oppressing people, mm-hmm. power over, not power together. And that happens. It happens everywhere. So people are leaving all these things for good reason, and people are angry at the church, quote unquote, church for good reason. But I mean, I think it's hard to really frame how I feel about it. But for me, it is the hope and the looking toward of the cosmic Christ that we are all within. I believe that the heart of it is good. But and sometimes it turns out poisonous things, just like everything else.
I just wanted to say, if anyone's listening in the Vatican, you just found your next pope. Just you can fix all the problems. That was amazing.
Wow.
That was amazing.
I found healing in a church, where in one church I had found hurt and betrayal, just complete sadness. In another church, I found healing. And so I'm not against the church. I just wish the church could own their role in how they relate and interact with people, and that they could realize how much they affect people in their lives, in their day-to-day lives, and the power that they've been given to be able to do that, and that they would hold it dearly instead of abusing it. And that's what leads to so many people that do turn away from church, because there have been so many things that have happened and there's trauma associated with it. And I feel like the church doesn't take ownership of that and try to do better. And now that's a real generalization with church, because there are a lot of good churches out there that I feel like they do speak for justice for everyone, for people, and they do try to encourage and lift up. But I do think that the church is so flawed, but we're all flawed. It's made up of people. And so I do get that and I understand that. But I also think church can be found even within a community that doesn't meet in a building like what the traditional church is, though, as well. I think it can be found in a group of people that you do life together with. Yes, there might be common interests, common views, maybe common faith patterns, whatever it is, but you grow and you do life together, recognizing each person individually, and that each person brings their own baggage, their own trauma to the group, and understanding that and holding that dearly, and just loving one another in whatever place each other is at, in whatever growth or lack of growth in the moment or whatever is happening. And I think that can be just as beautiful as a Sunday morning traditional church meeting in a building and singing songs of worship.
Yeah, regardless of the shape of it, I really like what that idea of it being a structure of sorts. I think there's something really interesting to that, because things don't grow without some sort of structure, some sort of resistance, some sort of oppression almost, if you will. Like if you don't... Mm-hmm. If you don't have a body that has tight enough skin to keep all the organs in and say, nope, you can't grow beyond this point, you got to go this way, there would be no body. There would be no way the body could grow. So you need a planter. If you're going to try to grow something in your house, you need to confine things sometimes. I've seen that creatively. Sometimes you have to like, no, I'm not just going to let any idea into the room. You have to have an idea. And this chord, this lyric, this whatever that came into the room right now, that doesn't quite fit the limited structure that we have to work with if we want this thing to grow into a something. And I had this idea this morning that I might add to my book. I always try to, I've been trying to avoid ever using any of my book stuff on the podcast. But this isn't quite in the book, but it might be. I don't know. We'll see. But
only one way to find out. Only one.
But there's been people that ask me, guitarists ask me sometimes after a solo or whatever, you can tell kind of a newbie improviser. Then they're like, oh, what scale were you using? Like, what scale was I using? And that's how you start. That's how you start with improvising. It says C7 and you're like, okay, these are the notes that you can play in the C7. This is the C Mixolydian scale. Here's the scale. And then maybe you start improvising more, and then maybe you learn another scale that could work. You could use a G minor pentatonic scale.
I like where this is going.
You're like, oh, that's kind of cool. That gives an interesting thing that accents the four more than the three, whatever. And then you can build. Now you've got this custom made pentatonic scale that has the sharp 11 in it and the 9 and the flat. And you're like, wow, that's a really interesting thing. At some point, the scales dissolve into each other. At some point, the structures fall apart. And I can still recognize when I'm playing something that's kind of a Mixolydian-ish thing. At some point, it just becomes the melody of that you're playing. And the chords are the chords. It creates a context. But at some point, you're not thinking scales. You're thinking music. You're being music. You're experiencing music in a way that you don't have to be limited by the individual scales anymore. Mm. One thing I've noticed with the mystics of every great tradition, at some point, it just becomes what is. It mm-hmm. just becomes presence. It just becomes God, whatever the words you use from the different traditions. They start sounding a lot alike in the, once you get into the mystical heart of it. It's like you've been shredding your scales for 30 years. You know the instrument at this point. You are familiar with the terrain, the territory, and all the constructs, all the structures that you needed to get to this point. You don't need to use them as a crutch anymore. Jesus isn't just the guy in the sky who lets me into the gates of heaven anymore. Mm-hmm. The Christ consciousness is everything and everyone and everywhere. Even if you keep the structures, like somebody like Richard Rohr, he's still in the structure, but he transcends the structure. Mm-hmm. His spirituality, he's not threatened by other structures anymore. He's not threatened by the ideas of Buddhism or Hinduism or any other traditions because he sees how they're all talking about reality because he's in it. He's living it. But it
makes his structure really more rich from my perspective that he's not threatened by these other things, but that he chooses Christianity. He still chooses this vein.
Yeah. And the same as with Mike.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, you and I have talked about that a little bit. It's like, I mean, this was our path. Like, what am I going to like start like trying to become like a Buddhist teacher or like a Hindu? Like if it just feels weird. It hasn't been my path. I haven't been studying that my entire life. And I'm not interested in slamming the path that I've come from or throwing it out because I see truth and love in these other paths. But it makes my tradition richer for me to have that understanding. I really resonate with that and had these experiences during meditation where it like this understanding came that it is all rhythm. And so with what you just said about you learning the scales, I just really thought that was beautiful. And that's how I see it here. Like if there is a different life after this one, whatever eternity is, this is the song I'm singing now. And this is the scale I've learned. And it's a beautiful song, right? And there's the trauma, even like the trauma. There's no beautiful song without anything complex in it or sadness, or if it's super plain and all in a major key. But this song, the pain and the tension that happens and all the things playing at once and fighting, trying to figure out where the song is going. That's part of the beauty of the song. But I guess that's how I see now and like afterlife now. Now I'm in this song. I've learned this scale, broken out of this scale, and am still learning these other scales that I'm honestly sometimes afraid of. I'm sometimes afraid to play because it's not the scale that I know. Why am I afraid to play that other scale? Mm-hmm. It's just another scale. Am I afraid that it's going to lead me to something really terrible and evil? Why do I believe that? Mm. I think if we believe that this other scale will lead us to something terrible and evil, then we really believe the core of who we are is evil. Mm. I don't know how to say this in the right way, but the trauma of the church can be a beautiful thing. Because without that, nobody would ever break out of the scale to see that it all leads to the same mm-hmm. source. But I realize that's a not great thing to say because the trauma of the church has some really evil things. And I'm not saying those super evil things are wonderful things, but like the cliche that still is very true, making beautiful things out of the dust, but you know, mm-hmm. something super traumatic has happened to so many people within the church. And it's this terrible story, right? Like, look at what the church has done. Ah! But I believe that the very trauma that we absolutely hate is the thing, that suffering that opens up a different perspective on all of it, a different scale that you learn to play.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was trying to get at with the body, the resistance. Like, without resistance to saying you can't go beyond this point, yeah. You're never going to grow strong. I mean, it's what working out is. You're literally like pushing against the resistance that says you can't lift this.
Yeah.
And you try and you try and you fail, and the weights say, no, you are a woman. Mm-hmm. you cannot do this, you whatever. Mm-hmm. And that resistance over time, if you believe, it is one thing I love about Christianity. I think built into it is resistance. Built into it is like, you can't follow Jesus and believe everything he said until it like turns against itself at some point, or you're like, love your enemies. And then you'd say that, and then the goats and the sheep and all that, like, okay, now wait, what? I'm in. What about all them? And at some point, like, it's the weights and you're in this structure and it's like, no, grow this way. Thou shalt not, thou shalt not, thou shalt not. And by the way, everything is permissible. What?
Yeah. You know, it's
like,
yes.
Not everything's beneficial. It's like in it, it's kind of brilliant. There's like a, if you really believe it, it offers enough resistance to you, but enough openness that you can transcend its limitations eventually.
When I was trying to figure out what that light on the beach had to do with my faith tradition of Christianity, I tried to work all that out while going on really long runs to train for a marathon. And my favorite runs were in the woods, just because it's beautiful. And I was thinking about how, you know, whenever I read mystics, it doesn't matter what faith tradition they come from, what they're talking about. Oh, that really, really makes sense to me. And if I get into like theologies, there's a familiarity to non-mystic Christianity, but not as much of a resonance, and to non-mystical Islam or Judaism or whatever, there's an interest, but still not that great resonance. And I was walking through the forest and I noticed there was a tree and there was a tree and there was a tree and there was a tree, which is what I always saw running along this running path. And I got really tired. It was like a 18-mile run day, which was a really dumb run to do off-road, by the way. And I got tired and I let my head drop back and I looked up and I saw all these trees I look at all the time. If you lift your eyes, just made this single canopy. You couldn't tell where one tree ended or the other began. And I watched as birds and squirrels and other life just zipped through the canopy with no awareness of what individual tree they were on. I thought about how our faith traditions, at the level we all walk on our path, it looks like there's a tradition and there's a tradition and there's a tradition. But at some point, mystics look up and just see a divine canopy. But then I look down, and underneath the soil, where all these trees come from, is another unitive thing, the earth itself. And as these trees grow out of the earth and their roots spread, their roots intermingle, their origin comes from the same place, goes through an individual experience we call a trunk, and then re-merges at the canopy. And so absolutely, I call myself a Christian. I identify as a Christian. I love Christianity and the church, but I acknowledge, embrace, and celebrate the common divine origin and mystical destination to all of these trees.
I feel like I've had more growth in the last year, and I haven't been in church one day, except for when we traveled home for Christmas. And I kind of hate to admit that, but at the same time, I'm also, I don't regret that choice.
To be in church originally?
To not be in church like this year. I mean, it's just been kind of an automatic kind of thing. I haven't had the desire to be there. And maybe that's just for this season right now in my life. But even not having church in my life, I feel like I've done more growth as an individual and in my own like discovery of myself in the last year than I ever did when I was fully in a church mentality and a religious mentality and living that life, what I thought was good and right. So, I mean, I don't know what that really says to anything, but it was just my observation.
Mm-hmm. I got an email from the church I go to most often. They said, we're having a membership Sunday coming up in case you and Jenny want to join. I was like, well, I don't think Jenny's been here. So it's probably premature for me to raise the should we join conversation.
And this is something we've discussed with our girls, because like one thing that Richard Rohr, bringing him back up, who, spoiler alert, he's going to be on the Christian series.
Woo! Yeah.
But he suggests parenting in some sort of structure like this, mm-hmm. for the reasons we're talking about, providing some resistance, some avenue for growth. But we're not raising the girls in some strict one religious upbringing. They've been to church. We brought them to church sometimes. I explained the Four Noble Truths of Buddhism to Amelie at breakfast this morning. I would try to give them a lot of stuff. But I think at some point, like what you're experiencing now, I'm trying to give credence to what somebody like Richard Rohr would say about this, in that your ability to grow here, you've still got community here. Mm-hmm. You still, and you've learned at this point, you've learned thou shalt not kill. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't need to be taught that anymore. Yeah. You've learned love your neighbors yourself. You've learned about community. You've learned you shouldn't, when you go to people's houses, you shouldn't steal their stuff. You know, all the like 101 mm-hmm. stuff that you're taught as a kid in a religious, whatever your upbringing is. I think people figure out a structure, whether they have religion or not, because otherwise, yeah, how do you teach a kid don't mm-hmm. steal? You're being able to grow, like taking you out of the planter and placing you in a backyard with some sprinklers. Oh, all of a sudden you're growing more. Mm-hmm. I think you're at a stage where that's working for you.
Yeah.
A different structure. You're still in a structure. You're still in a context to grow.
Yeah, I was thinking that right before you were talking about the girls. When we were in Bloom, we were raising them in the Christian tradition. And for the 4 years we've been here, I mean, we talk about God, we talk about Jesus, what all of this is. We are very open with our girls about spirituality. And I haven't wanted to raise them in a tradition until very recently. I haven't even talked to you a whole lot about this. I've been pretty opposed to it. A friend and I have talked a lot about this. So this guy told her, you need to be in this tradition. There needs to be a path. I'm going, well, this has been my path. My path of Christianity has led me here to a deeper love for Christianity and other religions. But what if my girls don't have that? Will they? Because what I've been hearing a lot of lately, and it'd be interesting to know the research behind this, if you don't raise them in a tradition, is it so open in their childhood that they need somewhere in their life, they need that structure. So then therefore they go to super evangelical or some radical religion, because I've been hearing mm-hmm. those stories of mainly from women mm-hmm. who have said, this has been my path. I grew up super conservative and I finally broke out. But guess what? My child is in now and they're an adult. Mm-hmm. They just got married. And why is this happening? Mm-hmm. I told my daughter she doesn't have to conform. I told her she's not second of the sexes. And she married a pastor of a church who believes there's no women shouldn't be leaders. Like, how does that happen? And so I've been thinking a lot about our girls and the structure, how good that is for us and necessary. I don't know. So my ideals on that are shifting a bit, because I want to believe we can just hand the girls all the truth, right? The truth from all of these religions. But maybe that's too much and they don't know what direction to walk within all of it. Maybe they do. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So to your suspicion, children of atheists, non-religious, and no specific religious affiliation parents are the most likely people to become religious fundamentalists. Wow. That has been borne out in mm-hmm. research. there's kind of a burgeoning movement in the skeptical community of atheists considering raising their children in moderate religious traditions because moderate religious traditions inoculate brains against fundamentalism, basically. Yeah. Because otherwise, like, there's a reason religion exists independent of any fact claims about God. And Oxford did a study that kind of revealed it's basically we have an innate bias to believe purpose-based explanations. We have an inability to contemplate the cessation of our own consciousness as a species. There's these cognitive recipes that create religion, and religion is so powerful at providing senses of communal belonging and meaning and purpose in life, which are the main things humans strive for. So children who are raised in a really open environment, when somebody introduces them to that hit of fundamentalism, it's almost drug-like in the kind of psychological relief it provides. And that's how you see people who grow up with socially progressive parents taking what seem to be very regressive postures because they find a sense of meaning, purpose, and belonging that they did not previously have. And so that's why I was when we left evangelicalism, I was like, how quickly can I get my family in a moderate religious environment?
That's interesting.
Yeah. And I feel like we tried that too, and I just couldn't find a space that valued women equally as men. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying we visited all the places.
Let alone queer people or...
Yeah. Yeah. I was also feeling all this stuff come up. I needed to take a very long break. We'd both been in church our entire lives. But I would like to attend somewhere, but I just don't know where to go.
I'd have to pick a religion.
to put a little face on it, on the other podcast I do, Ask Science Mike, I decided, I thought there were a lot of people who wanted to try church again, but they didn't because they didn't have anybody to go with. So I put up a form that people could fill out if you want. And the whole thing was, when I'm in town, I'll email out to this list and we'll just go to church together. That's it. And over 800 people in LA signed up.
Whoa.
So
should you just start a church in LA?
No, absolutely not. But my point is, there's something in this post community. Mm-hmm. People miss some things about church. They don't miss the antagonism towards women and queer people and marginalized communities and disabled people. They don't miss, if you don't do the right thing, God will send you to hell forever. But there is something about that collective meaning making that I think people miss, and that there isn't necessarily another cultural answer for today.
Mm-hmm. And just singing together. I miss a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. The rhythm, there's the deep spiritual movement with a group of people that I miss. Learning just singing together, even just for me, I'm finding recently it marks so much of the year. Mm-hmm. Now it's fall and we're going to decorate with leaves, or we're going to decorate with Christmas stuff and sing Christmas songs together. And now it's summertime. We're going to do these kind of activities. I'm missing even these very, what seemed like meaningless practices. It wasn't the Eucharist and this, if it was, now we decorate the nursery for this season. It marks these things in our life that I really miss it.
Going to mainline churches because they change the banners and stuff for the church calendar. And I just love it. I just love it. I was ordinary time now. All right, here we go. Oh no, it's Lent. What's up, Pentecost? I love the red banners. Wow. I know that's So this is like a dumb thing, but for me, it's just like grounding. I have no awareness of the passage of time, so I can walk in a room and there's just a color indicator of what part of the year we are in spiritually.
Yeah.
And I like it.
Oh, yeah. I like it too.
I like the like little ceremonies where the children come up and light candles for Advent.
Yep.
And families awkwardly read scripture. I love it so much.
Yeah, me too. And you're like, oh, that's the Christmas wreath we see every year. They we got it to, out again.
We went to this tiny church, and the men's choir sang a song. It was like four men, like in their 70s. And they were terrible singers. But their reverence and sincerity, I was as moved by that as anything I've ever seen. Like the dorkiest, weirdest things about church are my favorite things about church. I went to a church and I sat in a seat and an older person came and asked me to move. And I loved it. I was like, great. I just scooted right over and said, sit down.
Yeah.
Like, I love the whole thing.
When we went to West Angeles here in LA, I mean, we loved it. We were singing and dancing around. The girls were dancing around. And I'm not, like, things don't come up for me like they used to. I can be there and have a great time. But one of my favorite things about us going was the older woman in the back row was given Lucy and Amelie candy. I teared up.
It's like, you, like, sneak it up to him from her purse.
Yeah. Here you go, girls. Because we're like, where else do we have in our lives even that there's such a, these generations coming together? We hang out with our friend group and we all hover around pretty much the same age. Some of us don't have kids. Some of us have old, you know, teenagers. We don't have any 80-year-olds in our friend group. And they're not going to come hang out with us because we don't understand. I mean, just in our friend group, how hard is it sometimes for Michael and I are going, guys, remember, we have little kids. We're in a different place than you. And other people are going, guys, we have teenagers. We're talking about sex and we're talking about all these other things. And an 80-year-old is not going to relate to anything that all of us are going through. Or so it is a beautiful place where all these, you know, there's all these generations together doing one thing together. That just doesn't happen anywhere else.
Not where I saw this one going.
Like a really love letter for church.
Love. I'm usually the love letter to the church guy. So that's, it's nice to have a little company.
Jenny and I are both going on. Yeah.
I'm surprised.
This wasn't where I saw it was going either.
Well, I think for me, I mean, I'm going to be honest. Like, we've been bashing the church for years. Even when we were traveling, like, there was, I mean, not bashing the church, there was just a lot of cynicism. And that's needed. Like, I believe that's needed, that's good, that's necessary. But I believe that happens anywhere. If you're in church or you're in a mosque, wherever you're at, that's going to happen. We're the teenager growing up and needing to get out of the house to experiencing something new. And then we're like, fuck, I really miss Thanksgiving dinner that mom made. I'm surprised at where this conversation went too. I have a lot of more love for the church coming up within my own heart than has been there before.
I literally had never heard anything Jenny said the entire episode.
Well, you know me, though.
Nothing.
This could change next weekend and the weekend after, and we could end up being in church. So don't take it as, like, that this is my end-all, be-all.
Oh, I know.
Oh, yeah.
So
you reserve the right to be where you are, and we protect and preserve that right.
Someday, it's a dream that I have not spoken aloud. Dream. Because I hate it, too. Hate it. But just a temporary... Put a timeline on it where it dies. And then just do the most idealistic either year or I don't know. I don't know how long of like a church thing, like a weekly, what you want at church, and then you kill it.
Well, 800 people would probably show up for the initial.
Because the thing is, once it starts going and you start getting, it starts happening. People get attached to it and it starts being, oh God, it's horrible. But If you could just like, no, we're just going to do this and then we're going to kill it.
Stab it.
Get attached.
Let it bleed out. I guess
you lose some of the things about
it. What would it be like for the person who found out about it and attended the last week and loved it?
Well, who knows what can be born from its ashes? Other people could start other things. Whatever. Whatever can happen.
You know how long I've been trying to quash that there will be a liturgist church rumor and desires? And you just throw that out there. Do you know how much mail we're going to get? So it's going to be a lot of mail. I bet we will get letters, not just emails.
Guys, I'm just going to be honest. I would do that.
Damn, they go, oh, no.
And I know it. I can't believe I'm saying that. We did that our whole life. And I was like, I really thought I'm never going to do that again. I'm never, ever going to church again. I don't need that. I don't like it. I don't want it. No, sounds pretty great.
You say that
it's
now.
It's a horrible idea.
You say that now.
It is a horrible idea. It's a terrible idea and a wonderful idea.
It would be fun.
There would be that middle in-between time that would be, everything would be, you know.
Oh, the organization and setting up and all that.
But it's the initial. Oh,
we used to do it all the time. It's so much work. It's so much work, and you give and you give and you give, and then it's not enough for people, and then you just kind of hate people for a while. But
if you remember, you get some feedback. Yeah.
A little bit of feedback.
But when you, I always think of those moments, early bloom, there's nothing like it. When the people are finally together and you're seeing this dream without all the bullshit that you didn't want to happen. Yeah. And it's just people together singing and loving. And it's like, oh, God.
And later bloom. That happened then too.
Yeah.
For
but
me.
Then it was, I don't know. Yeah. I got tired of it by the end.
Yeah. That's a lot of work.
No offense, Bloom.
Anything like that is a lot of work.
Yeah, just again, people but start like thinking really they have jobs beautiful. And stuff.
Oh, some of my favorite times.
They got to protect their territory, their area. Like, we better kill this thing now.
And if you're curious what that might look like, don't forget you can meet us in London, Minneapolis, or Nashville.
Yeah, there you go. That's true.
For the liturgist gathering.
That actually was a good segue.
I can't help it.
That is real. That is the place that we start moving towards that. And we want to find ways of you all knowing each other in those spaces and starting other things. Dinner groups and VR groups and sex pods.
Oh, I almost said birthing groups, but sex pods.
LiturgistSexPods.com.
Pretty sure those already exist.
Ooh, do they really?
I recently met a thruple of men who, when they first started listening to the Liturgist podcast, were evangelicals. So, yeah, we're tearing some constructs down. Well, I can tell you in all honesty, I had never heard a single word that Jenny said on that podcast today. We do want to thank Jenny and Lisa for joining us on the program. And we'd love to hear your thoughts about what we shared on this episode. So you can go to theliturgist.com/podcast and leave a comment. Or you can talk to us on social media at The Liturgist on Instagram or Twitter or facebook.com/theliturgists.
Thanks to Greg Nordine for editing. Your hosts have been Science Mike. I'm Michael Gunger. Sorry for those of you that have been getting Hillary...
Withdrawals,
that's what I was looking for. She will be back. Sorry, it's been one of the episodes her mic messed up anyway. Thanks for listening, everybody.